Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we have a very special guest on the line, Mr. Nathan Heer. Mr. Heer is a historian. How are you, Mr. Heer?
Very good. I'm a great fan. How are you?
I'm all right.
Good to be here.
I've been talking to you and via Facebook, and I've been reading all your posts, and you are an extraordinary historian. One of the posts that caught my attention was the one about Mary Ellen Pleasant. Could you tell our audience about this fascinating woman?
Well, Mary Ellen Pleasant is a little-known black woman who should be up there at least with the likes of Harriet Tubman, not only because she worked with the Underground Railroad, but because she stood out so much in her own right and was really interesting and effective in bringing about freedom of slaves as well as freedom and progress in San Francisco. She is much sort of misrepresented and scorned, and so we don't have a lot of material on her. I first came to know about her myself, and not many black people know about her. A lot of white people, I would see them every now and then coming by the place. They're part of a tour group, and they would be stopping there by the monument, and they'll be talking about it. At least the tour guide will be telling them about it as I pass. But when I first came to be in that building, which is at Octavia and Bush, which had been the mansion, at that point it was just lying fallow as the Green Eye Hospital building. It was a world-famous eye specialist who had a hospital
Could
there.
Could you slow down, Mr. Heer? You're talking a little bit too fast for me. We're from different opposite coasts of the country. So we both have accents. So let's back up just a little bit. First, let's talk about you. How did you get involved with black history, period? And then let's slow down and talk about this building in Mary Ellen Pleasant.
Yeah,
who are you, and how did you get involved with it?
First, I should say that, like Kingfish used to say, I've been bamboozled if you can say that a historian is a person who looks to the past and tries to construct reconstruct the past. Then you can say I'm a historian, but actually my formal training is in sociology and clinical psychology. I have a PhD in each of them, but it was as a clinical psychologist that I came to know of Mary Ellen Pleasant. When I was looking for a new office, I did find one in a building that had become the the so-called Green Eye Hospital building, and it was ending that reign and was opening up as an office building. And I took an office. I was the first person to get there and take an office. And about 2 months later, there was an article.
How old was the building? You said it was a Green
Eye Hospital building. It had come to replace her mansion over the years. She had died in 1904. And so it was now coming to be an office building. And I took an office there, but in about 2 months, there appeared an article in the San Francisco Chronicle, the California Living Supplement to the Chronicle, about this black woman who had, and saying that this mansion, this building had been her mansion. And I was much intrigued about it. I tried to find out more. I went to the California Historical Society, African American Historical Society, which I happened to be at that time an honorary member of the Board of Trustees, Board of Directors, rather, of that group. They didn't have very much. They had some things on file. I went to the main library, and they didn't have much either, but I did see a lot of things, sort of like memos that people had written who had known her, like who was that masked woman? She was much mysterious and much written about in a way to scorn her because she had been much like a black female. The one who helps the poor, Robin Hood. she would get from the rich, and she would help the poor. She would. Well, you can't really believe very much as you read because so many different things have been written. And in recent years, even more things have been written, and they're very specific. And you could think that they were very correct, but then they differ. And so you believe whatever facts you find that you can believe. What I understand is that they all agree that she started back as in Virginia, born in Virginia, and then moved early as a child to Nantucket, Massachusetts, but it sort of starts to change there. Some say that her mother was killed as a slave by the overseer. Some say some cousins were killed, but at least she had some bad thing happen to her and her family, and finally found a way, and according to various accounts.
Dr. Hare,
mm-hmm.
How did you feel when you saw all of these tourists, and none of them looked like you, that knew more about Mary Ellen Pleasant?
I was a little disappointed because I thought this was a great, great woman, one of the greatest of all. She succeeded by, excelled by nobody that we know of. Might say Harriet Tubman is apples and oranges. But they had different roles, and Harriet Tubman was more specialized in that particular Underground Railroad, whereas this woman not only did Underground Railroad, she did other things, like integrating single-handedly. She integrated the streetcars in San Francisco, sort of like a Rosa Parks ahead of time, but having no SCLC, Southern Christian Leadership Conference, behind her, Reverend King behind her. She had a
Johnny Cochran partner, right? You said she stayed in the court system.
She got in there a lot because people brought her in there. One account had him taking all her money at the end, but seemed to be getting ahead of the story. But still, they had her going to court and losing her money. But she did. She was on record as having sued this railroad line in North Beach, which is an Italian section of the city, and she sued the company for black the right of black people to ride on the streetcars of San Francisco.
Were African Americans, black people allowed to ride on the streetcars prior?
No, not at that time. And she would she not only did that, but then she sued the city. One county has her suing the city. One county has her egging on that and just riding. And after that, the banks could ride because the town was very small at that time, maybe about 40,000 people. And
so was this a new streetcar? Was this a new streetcar company? Because I know in Philly, if I'm correct, I think African Americans were allowed to ride on the streetcars, and then they tried to introduce the Jim Crow laws. And
yeah,
they
but it might have been. You know, each state has its own history. Philadelphia's in the east, and
right.
San Francisco's in the west. San Francisco was a part of the gold rush. And
right.
A lot of laws were not made. It started like the Black Wall Street situation where the blacks got a chance to run for the land in 1989, like everybody else. And so the state didn't become a state until 1907. So as the blacks were doing better, the laws and the customs hadn't been cemented so strictly. And so the blacks could become prosperous and have fun, what they call black, what came now to be called Black Wall Street, and excite the rage of the whites and lead to the only bombing from the air of the black part of town by the whites. These were firebombed from airplanes, the early kind of airplanes they had at that time in 1921. Well, the same thing was true because these people, black people, were coming west along with the settlers, the white settlers, some of them as slaves, some of them as servants, some of them trying to make a hit on their own, trying to get better off on their own if they were free blacks. So and a lot of them did settle in Oklahoma. They decided to make Oklahoma an all-black state, and they set up 25 all-black towns in that process. But a lot of them didn't stop off there. They made it on to California, and they were part of the same contention. And even earlier, in 1851, when Marilyn Pleasant got to San Francisco, you wouldn't have these laws and things so strict as you might some other places. A lot of people were coming and going, and they had about 700 taverns, I'm told, you know, places like that. So just before 40,000 people. So that meant that it was a bustling town and sort of much of like the Old West, even though it has a metropolitan aspect coming on real very, very quickly.
Okay, Dr. Hill, we have someone on the line. Let's see who it is.
Okay.
Hi, caller. You're 1905. Do you have a question for Dr. Hill or a comment? Or you just want to
yes,
be silent?
Yes, hello.
Yeah.
Hi, Leslie. This is Mario. I do have a question for Dr. Hill. It's actually a two-part question. I wanted him to know, one, how did he come across the information on her, and two, why is it she was so obscure that actually almost no one knows about her?
Well, it's part of the same question. To answer the first question, I came across the information in the San Francisco Public Library in a rare book room. Said what they call it in those days, because they revamped the library now with the computers and all. But we're talking about 1979 when I came across her and went looking for information. I was thinking about doing a book on her, as a matter of fact, and it was so scarce. I saw things in the African American Historical Society's files, but also saw things in the library, the rare book room, because on a book I found was sort of like faction, sort of like roots, where you combine fiction and fact together. And it was an interesting book, and it told the story of her life. But I was struck by the fact that other people were not familiar with her, and black people especially were not familiar with her.
Doctor here, I'm sorry. How do you think those tourists found out about her?
She's known to a lot of whites. When I saw the class at San Francisco State, had maybe 55 people in there, and 12 whites and the rest of them black. And when I brought her up in the class, the white women especially were interested in her, but the blacks weren't interested in her. And I think one reason they're not interested in her is because she was smeared. She did. She apparently did have some women, white women, that she used as call girls, and her role as provider for these men who were prominent in the white political and commercial circles. One account had her as a general housekeeper, and there she would hear the stories that these men would tell about what they were invested in and so on, and she would then tell her mate about that, or she would invest in it herself as one of the ways she got her money. But she also was allegedly given to using these men, getting things on the men, providing them women. I've seen two blocks away is a house at 2020 Pine Street that was supposedly a house for one of her women, another one on California and Franklin, which is about four or five blocks away. And that, so she had all these different houses where these women would stay, and she'd set these men up, you know, with these women. And then they said she would compromise them in terms of their business arrangements. But in any case, she did amass this money, and she used it to good effect to try to help black people get jobs, to try to make these big politicians give better breaks to the blacks, poor blacks. And she never did forget the poor blacks, even though they said she passed for white as a, for a while. All the pictures I've seen show her not being that white. She probably she's kind of light brown.
Because I couldn't find Doctor here. I couldn't find that one photo of her online. Now, do you have any images?
Google it and put Marion Pleasant in there, and scroll down a little bit, and you'll find about four or five pictures.
Four or five. Now, throughout your research, were you able to find any evidence that she owned these brothels and?
Well, I don't think she. I don't know. She actually owned a brothel. It was said that she had these houses where they were kept in. It was one account even had her bringing one. She supposedly was married or living with a white guy at the time. A bookkeeper or an accountant or something, and she would, and she, people were talking about it, and so she would, she brought this white woman into one of them to live with them as an apparent wife, and they even adopted two children according to that account, but the children got up and believed that they were truly white, and the children of the mother who got to thinking she was the real, could be the real wife, and that was a big contention around that, but that may have been romanticizing, fictionalizing on the part of the author. A lot of that was taken up by Lerone Bennett. Lerone Bennett wrote an article in Ebony in 1978, which had much of the same kind of thing in it, and pretty much a summary of that kind of thing. So,
any primary sources you come across? And are you looking for any primary sources?
Well, they got some, you know, they got books. I have one book. I've forgotten the name of it now, but I could probably look it up. But it's there's also somebody sent me a book recently about the Old West, and they had two or three paragraphs in that. But when they got the street wrong, this was a very honorable historian. When they got the street wrong, saying she was at Webster Street rather than Octavia, then I kind of doused a bit the authenticity of that account. And so when you read these books, you can find them in various libraries, certainly online, notice there, you're left to your own opinion as to which facts you accept. And but some of the, one group tries to honor her, and they do base their things on some concrete evidence, like the court case against the North Beach Railroad line in 1866, and also they said one account has her helping to found the Bank of California. And even though I have not checked out that evidence, I presume that it would be have been checked out by the author who wrote it, because he was a professor at Quintard Taylor, I think his name was. But I've seen it before. He's at the University of Washington, and so very reputable. And he said that she helped to form the Bank of California. And so
now, are there any monuments or markers?
Well, that's one right outside of my the building there, where my office is, on the sidewalk is a around, I guess, monument in the ground, and it has four cement blocks on each corner there. And a lot of people, I see white people coming to look at that and wondering and reading it. It says there that dedicated to the mother of dedicated to Mary Ellen Pleasant, the mother of civil rights in California, who supported the Underground Railroad, something to that effect, and John Brown's efforts and that sort of thing. And so they will be looking to read it, and sometimes blacks will be reading. If anybody who is black, they'll get a chance to hear from me, because I'll go over and tell them about her. So they will know about it. But a lot of people will look at that, but again, the whites are more interested in it than the blacks. And I think, again, as I have an education background and so on, the blacks have this ambiguity, which comes from her alleged occupation. And one of the ways she got the money, but it's so that they call her Mammy Pleasant. Most of them who know of her have heard
Mammy.
Of her as Mammy.
They call her Mammy?
Yeah, like Mammy Pleasant. Yeah, see, Mary Pleasant is her name, but they call her Mammy. You know, Mammy was a person who sponsored, like a pimp, sponsored women for sexual favors to men. And so she had white women. And that made it all the worse than the man's whites. And they, most of the accounts, even the people in the building, they will praise her, but they will tend to emphasize that part of her.
Do you think that her occupation was part of the Underground Railroad? Because I know in the case of William Steele, he posed as a clerk when he really was much more than that. Do you think that she was, this was a disguise?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, and a lot has, I think that has great merit, because she did do a lot of different things, and she was kind of mysterious in her own ways. She kept creating different notes for her memoirs, and she would present herself in different disguises, and no doubt going out of that background that she had in the railroad. In fact, it was said that when she came out here, she came at that time. She was married with a man who had been working with that sort of thing too. And then they had to get away from the slave holders who were after them for their activities in the Underground Railroad. Some people have her married to a planter, Virginia planter back there.
People thought she was married to a slaveholder.
No, well, he was a planter. I guess he wasn't. Apparently, he wasn't a slaveholder because he was helping to free the slaves in the Underground Railroad.
But it appeared that he was.
Yeah. I guess he had different disguises. He might take on a disguise.
Right.
And even though I said earlier that she, I didn't think that she probably could be able to pose as white. She probably could if she put some powder on and that sort of thing. In fact, they said she often wore a bonnet covering her face when she was in San Francisco. And as part of the mystery, they don't know what's behind that bonnet. And she was wearing trying to cover her face, and she was very mysterious. She didn't come out much. And she was, when she came out, it was a lot of interest on the part of people. They hated her, but they were intrigued by her.
The people that was involved with the Underground Railroad, they were very, very ingenious as far as how
had to be.
They. Yes, right. So I'm not surprised that you would say that there's all these different stories about who she was and what she did for a living. In order for them to be successful, no one really could know what they were doing. And
good point.
And so I would like to read more about her in her own words specifically. Now, I know you mentioned John Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us slowly her involvement with John Brown.
Well, one account had her putting $30,000 hidden under the ground by some tree and sending him a message that she had some money to support, but to hold off from going into Harper's Ferry. because she wanted to go down and have accept some support, at least among the Negroes that are calling in down there, people down there, especially the free blacks. And she then another kind of has her going to rent some place for him to hide out and so on back east there near Harper's Ferry. But in any case, both all accounts have him jumping the gun and not heeding her suggestion that he go slowly and wait a while. And when he went ahead with his plan and went to Harper's Ferry and got taken there by the authorities.
Familiar with the Copeland brothers?
I've heard of them, but I don't know much about them.
Okay, yeah, that was another family, African-American family, that was involved with the Underground Railroad and working with the raid. And also they were black militias. They were known to confront and rescue African-Americans who were stolen from slave catchers.
Yeah, I'm sure that there were many people involved, like in the Civil Rights Movement, the Black Power Movement. Most of the people have never been heard from. People who died, people who went to jail, people who are in jail now are not known. And so only a few people will be known in a movement, but it takes as many different kinds of people to make a movement as it takes to make a world, I guess.
You know the story. Now I know it only because of you and Facebook. And I know you mentioned that people are walking around her mansion taking pictures of the marker that's in the ground. What do you
and
suggest?
And the six trees she planted there, they're really
okay.
Big. And now, she planted them in the 19th century, and they still stand. And they're eucalyptus trees, and they have a very pungent odor from the acorns or whatever they fall from there once a year. And once a year, the black crows will come and light on those trees. And if you have to watch it, because they think that your hair is a nest, and they'll dive in and peck your head. And so, they're interested both in the trees, I wanted to say, and in the monument, but mostly the monument, because they don't know what the trees are about. The trees are something that attracts their attention. And the tourists know it's architectural, relationship or horticultural relationship, but the monument is what gets everybody's attention.
You're saying that the tourists are really interested in the architect of the mansion.
All of that, yeah. They look up, you'll see them standing and also taking pictures of it, because it was alleged to be the first time that one account had been the first time that a building was built, where it's on the ground on one level. But part of it is below the ground, so that the first floor is not the bottom floor. You see a lot of that now, but at that time it was supposed to be an innovation that she had. Part of the building is on the first floor, and part of it is on the lower floor, and the elevator goes down in the middle, goes down all those floors, including the bottom one, which has a lot of commerce down there, too.
How do you suggest people learn more, and, you know, the African-American, especially the African-American youth? Is there any way that we can reach out to these teachers in your area to make this part of their field trip, an annual field trip? The library should get involved. What should we do, and how can we help?
But you already are doing that by writing these books and trying to get the information that can be amassed. I think that people shouldn't worry so much about the accuracy of it, because they say a lot of it was demanded by the circumstance and the goals that they had of an Underground Railroad. But even the heroes, we're never going to know the correct facts about a public figure. I know public figures now, and I know that people don't know them. They think they know them, but they do not know these persons, because they only know what is in the press and a lot of times not in the press, and almost always what's in the press is inaccurate in some way, so, by distortion or just by simple error. And so you really can't be sure about the facts about anybody that you know as a public figure. You would never think that Clinton was doing what he's doing in the Oval Office. It hadn't come to light. Most of the time it does not come to light. And so, therefore, we only know what we happen to see in the papers.
Is the National Park involved with them trying to make this a recognized site, or is the Historical Society of California involved?
Well, that's what the monument there was, the San Francisco African American Historical Society. And they also have done a monument out in Napa, where she wound up living at the end of her life, dying in 1904, broke, having lost the money in the courts and one way or the other. And so they have this monument out there now, and recently I noticed that some persons went out there to honor her and to recognize or establish this monument. And so they're beginning to do that sort of thing. I think that you could get people interested in it if you keep down that the mammy part of it, which it seems to give a lot of people a lot of pause. But
mammy is a negative connotation to me.
Yes,
I always felt that it meant like a slave, mentality.
Yeah.
A mammy. Now, you mentioned Napa. For people that's on the East Coast like myself, where is this in reference to where you are in San Francisco?
It's about 60 miles from here. It's distinguished, known more best by the fact that that's where the state psychiatric facility is, where they send people when they have to keep them a long time in the psychiatric ward. That was where it got its name from. But it has a wine, too. You see Napa wine, all that area is known for making good wines and having wine growers. But she also had a home while she was living in this mansion. She had a country home in Oakland, which is across the bay. But Oakland was called the country then. Oakland, I think, is a city. It is a city now. And it has, it by Ronald Dellums and the like, Black Panthers. But it really was the country in her day. And she had a home out there, too. But Napa, being 60 miles out, was way out then. But now, of course, it is not that far to go by freeway car. And so it's really like a suburb, a little town.
Now, you mentioned three different areas she lived in. Were any of these areas historically black towns or settlements or anything that you know of?
No, not to my knowledge, because there wasn't too much known. Even now, San Francisco has two black areas, but they're now being regentrified and taken over by whites. And you used to could see, even in the 80s, you could see them taking these Victorian houses and moving them by these big moving trucks. But they just come now and put the blacks, they call it urban removal, and they put the blacks and take them to another town, like Richmond, California, is across the bridge in one direction, and Daly City is in another. And they move the blacks to these towns. And then, meanwhile, they have these middle-class young whites who come in and they just make it a middle-class white area. They're taking back the Fillmore. The Fillmore was
a
great...
When Mary Pleasant Ellen was there, or Mary Ellen Pleasant was living there, was it historically, was it an African-American community?
No. In fact, it became...
Won.
It soon became around there, emerged as a Japanese part of town. But when World War II, when they put the Japanese in the concentration camp, they lost a lot of that. And that's when the blacks were coming from the south to work in the war industries. and factories and things, and the blacks started taking over out of that part, and they had big businesses there. Fillmore had a hotel. It had nightclubs where famous people like Nat King Cole and all would come and play. And it was even in '68 when I came to San Francisco to live, it was still a pretty good business district. But now it's not, and now the Japanese came back in as much as they could, and quite a bit. And even the jazz, the major jazz club there now is owned by Yoshi's. It's owned by Japanese, you know, with the black music, the black music. But the whites, what's coming in is the white yuppies. They call them yuppies, young urban whites, young urban professionals, something like that. And they are coming, taking back over Fillmore. So it's such that they have a newspaper called the Fillmore now, local, you know, community newspaper. And pretty soon the blacks will not be around that very much. But it's kind of economic and sort of political. And as you know, things are always changing, always being buildings being torn down and being replaced by another. One kind of business is there for 15 years, and the next 10 years something else is there. And I'm often appalled when I walk into a bank and some young person welcomes me to the bank, and I was there before the bank was there, and I was there when it was another bank there, when the bank that's there now was down the street. And so all that just you are impressed.
I have a 2-part question for you. What did the neighborhood look like when she was there? And then I want to move up to the present state.
Well I used to kind of imagine that. I used to imagine that when I was saying all that when I walked down the street. It was not too built up, according to accounts of it, though it did have buildings there. But in the picture you see, it would be kind of like a lot of dirt didn't have the cement and everything as much as they do now. But up the hill, even more so, is a park called Lafayette Park, and it's about 2 blocks up the hill to the north. And that was there all the time. It has not left, though it has gone through many changes. And you used to could go in there, and it's safe to now. It's dangerous at night, but some people do that. But I used to jog around it all the time before day in the morning, but not anymore. But so things are changing. But that shows right there how it looked much like a park. It was not a built-up, dilapidated, or poor section at all. She helped the poor, but she did not live with them. And then
I like that. You said she helped the poor, but she did not live with them.
Yeah, she didn't. And so therefore, she it was different.
Doctor Hare, you talked about the mansions being moved. You're talking about?
Well, not so much mansions as Victorian houses, which were thought to be very valuable. And coveted and popular with Victorian style, Victorian architectural buildings were in great demand. And so they moved a lot of them out of the Fillmore into the places where the whites were. And then the middle class, really.
They literally picked these homes up. And I saw them on a big
moving truck. I don't know whether you've seen a house moving truck. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's what they would use. And I saw them many times.
How many miles away do they move these homes?
Oh, it's a mile through the city itself. It's only about 1 million people, give or take, and so even now. And so even including the outlying. So it would, if you go a couple of miles here, a few miles there, you cover the whole city. And it's not the size of Chicago or anything like that. And they just take the truck and slowly drive it down the street. I saw this with my own eyes. The truck was, and in fact, that's the way they moved, did with houses down in Oklahoma when I was a kid. and then, but I saw that, I was glad to see that essay maybe in the late 70s, early 80s in San Francisco, but I did see that with my own eyes. And of course, read about it in the newspaper as well.
Okay.
You know,
now,
when
before,
it was happening, they would.
Before we let you go, because we're down to our last 5 minutes, and I don't want to wait till the very last second. I know you've written books, and I would like for you to share your contact information and more information about your books, because what you're doing tonight is great, and you have a lot of information, and I know your book has to be valuable as well.
Yes, well, thank you. I'm sure that I know more about the things that are not so elusive, but I think I'm very much encouraged that people are interested in this and are beginning themselves to master information that I did not. But my books, I started with, I was most known, I guess, for being the first black studies director in the country. And so I was a sociologist for a long time until I got, we had a 5-month strike and I went down in strike, and they invited me to leave, but the campus and academia. But my books would be socializing, like The Miseducation of the Black Child. Some of them I did with my wife, Julia Hare, Dr. Julia Hare. You can see her on YouTube. You go to YouTube and put in Julia Hare, Dr. Julia Hare. You see her being interviewed by Tavis Smiley at the State of the Black Union, and she got more than 1 million hits for that that particular YouTube thing. So you may, if you haven't seen it already, you might want to look at it. But I've done books like The Black Anglo-Saxons. I did The Endangered Black Family.
Slow down, Dr. Hare.
The Endangered Black Family. The Endangered Black Family. Back in 84, I did the Black Anglo-Saxons. In 1965, I did a lot of articles in Negro Digest, Ebony, maybe half a dozen Ebony. I did in other places, magazines, even one in Newsweek, one in Saturday Review when it was still publishing. But I was a founding publisher of the Black Scholar, and I did also the book Bringing the Black Boy to Manhood, the passage which introduced a call for and was a catalyst for the rights of passage movement that cropped up among African Americans, for African American boys, in the mid-1980s, and we did other things like the Black Agenda and the crisis in the Black sex politics. And my wife had how to find and keep a BMW Black man working, and also sexual anorexia in the Black woman. But this book can be found aside from being on Google Books and Amazon.com, it can be found on our website at www.blackthinktank.com, www.blackthinktank.com. And you can find also information about us there, too, as well as all of the books there. And you can find them in libraries and your favorite bookstore that sells black books
Wonderful. Now, my last question for you is about Mary Ellen Pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
What would be a dream come true for you in regards to Mary Ellen Pleasant? How would you like for her memory to be memorialized or her legacy?
Well, I like for it to be memorialized. I like for it to be known. I think that she... the only person that I would put on our level would be Harriet Tubman, and so been a lot of black women, who had a great. But she's back then that day. I'm not talking about modern day black women, but I would say for the women of that time, she's one of the major black women, and for all time, I think she should.
But how would you want us to recognize her? You would like a big monument? Would you like a library in her honor?
That's a good idea. It might help, certainly. But I'd like for people to get interested in her life and talk about it, and maybe to duplicate her example of fearlessness, of creativity, and of not forgetting from whence they came, and giving back and all of that while enjoying the best that the white world has to offer and outstripping them even in the acquisition of their things. And nevertheless, she gave back to the poor, black poor. And so she is an example, not only to be known about, she's interesting in her own right, but she also is an example and a model for a black person, male or female, to pattern after. And if we get her as an example early in life, I didn't learn her until I was in my 40s, and too much water under the bridge by then. But I think that many young people could, as you said earlier, profit from her being in libraries and seeing how you can bring yourself up from nowhere and nothing, so that people don't even know where you came from for certain, and come up to the top and then give back to the poor and help to be able to build something that plant some trees. If you can move one grain of sand, the world will never be quite the same again, as somebody has said. And so if you plant six trees that grow, people will never forget you because somebody will always say, well, who did that? What happened there? And your name will come up. Somebody will get interested in you, and then they'll write a book. Even they can write find the information they'll create it, or they'll write a novel, something like that. But your name will not be forgotten. Because we don't.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I want to thank you, Dr. Hare, for coming on the show. Can you make me a promise you'll be back on again?
Yeah, I'll hope to be back anytime. Thank you.
Great. And I want to thank you, Mario, for the wonderful question. And this is the Gist of Freedom. We want to thank everybody for listening. Please come back and join us again on Thursday at 8 p.m. Have a good night, everyone.